Okay. Okay. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavitvishavahai. Om Shanti 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 Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam Sarvabhuta Guhashayam Yat Sarva Vishayatitam Tasmai Sarva Vide Namaha. Om. Very good. Nice to see you all. Welcome also to the students attending this class online. We continue with our study of chapter 18. In prior classes, we've gone through, Shankara has led us through this very profound application of this metaphor, the mirror metaphor, what we understand as pratibimbavada. And now, having concluded his use of the metaphor, he's shifted now to showing us the phala. And this is a very important shift in any Vedantic text. You can't just talk about the tools that you're using. Vedanta is a tool, is it not? We call it a prakriya, a method to lead you to discover your true nature, and with that discovery put an end to suffering. So we've said on so many occasions how Vedanta is not a philosophy at all, and to call it a philosophy is to miss the boat entirely. So it wouldn't be unfair to call Vedanta a tool. Suppose you had a set of carpentry tools, but had no idea what a house looked like. Could you build a house? So to talk about the phala, the results, the fruits of these teachings, is very important. We started that with the prior, at the end of the prior class. We'll continue with that today. Turn this on, and oh, that didn't go. Let's get that. There we go. Okay. All right. Ashana yadi nirmuktyai, ashana dhadya nirmuktyai, tatkala jayate prama, tatkala jayate prama, tatvamasyari vakyarte, tatvamasyari vakyarte, trishu kaleshva samshayaha. Trishu kaleshva samshayaha, describing the pala as being nirvinirmuktihi at the end of the first line. Mukti, liberation. And again, whenever we use the term mukti or moksha, it's not merely freedom from rebirth. That's such a narrow view. It includes freedom now, freedom from suffering now. So, vinirmuktyai, to gain this complete freedom from what? And so, is Shankara going to say freedom from rebirth here? No way. He says, ashanad yadi. Ashanaya is hunger. To become free from hunger and thirst, and these are used as metaphors, really, to describe all forms of suffering. By the way, Shankara's use of words here is a little bit casual. If he says, for the sake of free, you can guess where this is going. Do you think an enlightened person never gets hungry? That's what Shankara is using as an example here. So what is the difference? an enlightened person doesn't. How do you feel when you get really hungry? You get kind of irritable and and like that. So that's a difference. The enlightened person absolutely feels a sensation of emptiness and hunger, but doesn't feel that irritation that usually accompanies it. So just to understand this a little bit more clearly. So that complete freedom from suffering, and that's really his point here. It's nothing to do with hunger. It's everything to do with suffering. That complete freedom from suffer takes place how? Tatkala prama jayate. Takes place when? Prama jayate. Prama, knowledge. And not any kind of knowledge. Knowledge specifically, and this is a place where many people misunderstand Vedanta. Knowledge here is not information, as it usually is. Here, prama, knowledge means the personal discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Not knowledge about Atma, but rather the discovery that you are that unchanging consciousness. That's prama here. So that prama jayate arises, and then for the freeing you from suffering, and that freedom from suffering comes tatkala, at the time of knowledge. And we have to take that one step further, at the time of listening. That is, you make that discovery while you are engaged with the teachings of Vedanta. It need not literally mean while you're sitting in class, except it usually means at the time of sitting in class, because that's when it's most powerful. But if you're thinking about what was taught in class afterwards, that's also very, very possible. And notice I said this is not gaining information, which means, and this, I don't know if you've thought about it. You've heard me say many times that the main practice of Advaita Vedanta is self-inquiry. When does that self-inquiry take place in your practice of Advaita Vedanta? All the time. Meaning, now, during class. In fact, I would argue that if you're not engaged in a practice of self-inquiry right now, you're wasting your time. You're coming here as a kind of a hobby. By the way, that happens more often than you think. I know a great number of students who seem to treat Advaita Vedanta as an intellectually fascinating hobby. It happens. And, you know, they can enjoy the hobby, but that's never, you'll never find enlightenment. You'll never gain freedom from suffering with that kind of approach. So they're not engaged, such people are not engaged in the practice of self-inquiry. You are, and the idea is that self-inquiry goes on during the class, which means the discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda takes place when? Usually during the class. And it's interesting to kind of look over our shoulders at topics we've already discussed. Does it mean that enlightenment takes place in samadhi? In samadhi, your mind is resolved. Your mind is not available. Look at this. Your mind is not available for self-inquiry during samadhi. That's a fact. Your mind is not capable of engaging in self-inquiry during samadhi. I'm not saying samadhi isn't important and valuable, but I'm just saying that the discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma doesn't take place during that state of samadhi. Your mind is not capable of self-inquiry. The recognition, atma sakshatkara, the recognition of your true nature. You may abide as Satchidananda Atma, But where's the recognition? That's the key. There's that so-called veil of ignorance, which has to be removed. That veil of ignorance is removed through recognition, through discovery, through prama, as Shankaracharya says here. So, takes place at the time of listening, not during samadhi. And remember, we had a topic several months ago, prasankhyana. This was the contention of Mandana Mishra, that you have to go on repeating Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, and eventually you'll get it. And we discussed that at great length. I'm not going to return to that topic. You can always go back and look at the old recordings on this. But does it mean that how many times do you have to think Aham Brahmasmi until you finally get it? Is it the 800th time? And if after having said it 800 times, you're not yet enlightened, then it's obviously 801. Of course, then it's 802 and 800. You get the point. So at the time of listening means is another way of understanding this prasankhyanavada of Mandana Mishra that we discussed some months ago is not valid at all. So at the time of listening, you're engaged in a process of self-inquiry. The words of the scripture and the guru lead you to recognize, I am the consciousness that we've been talking about for the last, how long have we been here? 24 years? Going on 25 years. All right, our 25th anniversary is coming up. Okay. Then, continuing. Tattvamasyadi vakyarte. This knowledge arises when the vakya artha, when the meaning of the statement, vakya here means what? Mahavakya, tattvamasyadi, like tattvamasi. When the meaning of tattvamasi, you are that, or put it in first person, I am that. When that meaning arises, and that meaning trishu kaleshu asamshayaha, that meaning is asamshayaha, rather you are asamshayaha, you have no doubts with regard to the meaning of tattvamasi, you have no doubts trishu kaleshu, in the past, present, in the three times, in the past, present, and future, it means that all of your past doubts have been resolved, all of your present doubts have been resolved, and the possibility of any future doubts has already been mitigated. That's possible, by the way. When you remove the basic, it's a very heavy logical topic, we won't go further, but just the fact that Shankara mentions it here shows that, yes, it is possible to have knowledge which is impervious even to future doubts. We won't go into the technicalities of that here. But the point is that when that Mahavakya is not just understood in a language way, but understood in a personal way, I am that Satchidananda Atma, and when that knowledge is utterly free from doubts. The problem is, excuse me just a moment. The problem is when that goes on in class, you are guided by these teachings to recognize, yes, my consciousness, the consciousness which is my essential nature, is unborn, uncreated, boundaryless, utterly unaffected by anything and everything. Generally, when that arises, at the time of listening, during class, it's not doubt-free. You get that Generally, we call that an insight. You say, oh, I get it. And then the next thought is, what? Now, that moment, oh, I get it, is genuine. It's absolutely genuine. You know, how can you discover something and not have discovered it? When you see... you've been using that mirror metaphor. A mere glance in a mirror is all it takes to recognize yourself. A mere glance at your friend standing on the corner is all it takes. You don't have to stare. It doesn't take time. And what I'm suggesting here is the recognition of your true nature as a result of this self-inquiry takes place in a moment. In an instant. It's not something you have to really work on. And remember in college days where there were some teachings that were really complicated and you really had to work at it to understand. I remember calculus classes and break your head. This isn't like that. Can you imagine looking at a complicated differential equation and getting it in an instant? Yeah. Doesn't work that way. This does, however. But the difference here, interesting. Nice to make this metaphor. When you finally do understand that differential equation, it's because you've gone through it, the derivation. Remember learning set differential, you may not know what that is. Just an equation. If you just see an equation, it's like, what is that? But do you remember when you were given the equations in a classroom, your teacher generally would lead you through the derivation of that equation? That's a common teaching technique, and I certainly remember that in like physics classes and chemistry classes. You don't just get the equation, you get the derivation of the equation. And the advantage of that is when you get the equation alone, it's very mechanical, but when you derive the equation, it's okay. When you derive the equation, it's doubt-free. You get it solidly. And this is very different from Vedanta. We're not driving anything here. It's a matter of insight. And when you get that momentary insight, because you haven't gone through this long process of derivation, it's possible you have some doubts. And that's usually the case. We've used a word for that, and a little complicated. I'll put it up on the board in just a minute. It's called sa. Pratibandhika jnanam. Jnanam here, again, not in the sense of information, but in the sense of discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. But that knowledge which is sa pratibandhika, pratibandha, is a common term we use for obstacle. Sa pratibandhika jnanam is knowledge that comes with obstacles like doubts. You have the insight, but there's so many doubts and confusion and vagueness in your mind, so many hindrances, that you have the knowledge, but without the pala. Now that's our topic, right? Is pala. So it's possible to have discovered your true nature and still suffer. Why? Sapratibandhika jnanam. Those doubts and vagueness have to be removed. And that's our next topic. So we will move on to that right now.
Pratibandhavihinatvat, pratibandhavihinatvat, swayam chanubhavatmanah. Swayam chanubhavatmanah jayetaiva pramatatra jayetaiva pramatatra swatman yeva na samshayah swatman yeva samshayah.
Start in a third line. Tatra
In that situation, pramajayeta eva. In that situation, one prama, this self-discovery is a nice way of putting it, although prama literally means knowledge, but self-discovery is a sense. When that self-discovery, jayeta, happens to arise in eva, indeed, tatra, in that situation, in what situation, depending on whether that knowledge arises with pratibandhas or without pratibandhas. Makes a huge difference, the difference between insight and abiding wisdom. So almost every student of Vedanta, myself included, we go through a process. You know, let me preface my comment with this. It's so common to have this false notion that enlightenment, you know, the light bulb blinks on and suddenly you are enlightened and all your problems have disappeared. And this is just such an unrealistic and false notion. It just doesn't work that way. And we've had a lot of discussions on this before, so let me not get off on a detour. But you might remember our earlier discussions about neuroplasticity. Nothing in our minds and brains can change in an instant. It takes time. It's organic. The brain is certainly organic, and the mind, based on that organic brain, it takes time. Nothing happens instantaneously. We can say that that moment of insight is instantaneous, but enlightenment, properly understood, because enlightenment depends on the removal of these pratibandhas, it's a process. Discovery is instantaneous, but then removal of pratibandhas is a process. And that's what we're talking about here. So that pramajayeta, that discovery arises. What kind of discovery? Second line, swayam, discovery of your true self. Anubhava atmanaha, discovery of Atma, that Atmanaha is genitive case, discovery of Atma, which is Anubhava, not experience so much as consciousness. The nature of Atma being that fundamental reality, consciousness, Satchidananda Atma. That Pramajayeta, that discovery arises how, and here we say that discovery, Tatra Shankara is pointing back to the prior verse, so let me make that more clear. That discovery which leads not to a momentary insight, but to freedom of suffering, which is what Shankara said in the first line of the prior verse. He said, Ashanai Adi Vinirmuktai. When you become utterly free from all forms of suffering. So here tatra means the arrival, the arising of prama, which bears fruit as complete freedom from suffering. And that arising of knowledge which leads to freedom from suffering takes place, first line, pratibandha hinatvat. Because of the hina means with absence. So due to the absence, hina, vihina, due to the complete absence of pratibandha, as we discussed, that is the obstacle. The obstacles to literally the obstacles to knowledge, but in a way that's misleading. Because that insight was not obscured in any way, but rather was accompanied by these problems. So instead of saying it's they're obstacles to knowledge, better to say they're obstacles to freedom from suffering. They are obstacles to moksha, not obstacles to self-discovery, because that self-discovery took place in that moment of insight. So these are not obstacles to that Atmajnanam. They are knowledge, they are obstacles to moksha, they are obstacles to freedom from suffering. And what are those obstacles? We had this discussion long, long ago, but I'd like to go to the board and go through this again. It's maybe a year ago we had this discussion. This text has been going on for a long time. So we've had a discussion before. Get rid of that. Okay. We've had this discussion before that these obstacles fall into three categories. So let's review that. And this is a very important topic. So again, that fancy word, let me make sure we're on the board. Okay. Sa-prati-bandhika jnanam. So that knowledge which is accompanied by pratibandhas, by obstacles, and those obstacles fall into three categories. You may or may not remember this topic. Yeah, good. So the first category we'll call is pramana. Before we used the term, Shankara used the term samshaya, doubt. Here, instead of doubt, asambhavana, which is a more precise word. Asambhavana is the feeling that it's not right. it's a way of expressing a doubt. But a more precise way of expressing a doubt. What kind of doubt? This is not possible. This is not correct. That's what the word asambhavana. Literally, I got one dictionary meaning might be impossibility, but that's not an appropriate definition right here. But rather the feeling or the conclusion that this is not correct. And what is not correct? Pramana. What is the pramana? Vedanta in general and Mahavakya in particular. So the Mahavakya is what makes you enlightened. But you get it, you know, tattvamasi, and you get it, and then you say, what? What? How can I be that? That's pramana asambhavana. Scripture says tattvamasi, and you say, yeah, but. How very common American English. Yeah, but. So that is pramana asambhavana. Remember, pramana means is a means of knowledge, and it's referring to Vedanta in general, but specifically referring to the Mahavakya. The second of these three categories is prameya asambhavana. Prameya is what is revealed by the Mahavakya, by the pramana, and the prameya is your true nature, Satchidananda Atma. So suppose you get tattvamasi, I am that, but who am I? There's some confusion about my true nature. First is some confusion about the teachings in general, Mahavakya in particular. Second is some confusion or lack of clarity or doubt or vagueness or all of these. All of that is included in this word, asambhavana. But in the second case, with regard to the prameya, with regard to your true nature, and the third category I think will be more familiar to most of you, which is viparita bhavana. Notice this Bhavana, bhavana, bhavana. A feeling. A feeling as opposed to a knowledge. It's interesting. Which has more effect on our lives? Thoughts or feelings? Most people would answer the latter. Feelings have a very strong effect on our lives. So that's one of the reasons for using this word bhavana, asambhavana, the feeling or sense that this isn't right. Prameya asambhavana, the feeling or sense or conclusion, we can say, that about me, doubt, vagueness. These are words that suggest feelings. Doubt and vagueness, confusion. The words suggest confusion about the Mahavakya, about your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. And then the final one, which we have discussed at great length, Viparita Bhavana, which is a feeling which is contrary to what you know to be true. And an example of that is when Vedanta leads you to recognize the fact that consciousness being unchanging, the word they like to use in translation, immutable. Immutable is a fancy word for unchanging. And tell me, how can unchanging consciousness get happy or sad? Unchanging consciousness. Where am I? I'm looking at the board. There I am. I'm looking here at the computer. Unchanging consciousness can neither become happy or sad. But you say, why am I becoming happy or sad if I when you understand that unchanging consciousness doesn't become happy or sad, but I feel like consciousness becomes happy or sad? That's an example of viparita bhavana. And then just to finish this topic, then we'll come back to the verse, you might remember that you've all heard shravana manana nididhyasana, and you've heard it in a particular way. Shravana, listening to these teachings for the sake of gaining enlightenment. Manana, removing doubts. And nididhyasana, for the sake of removing viparita bhavana. There's a more nuanced interpretation, which we saw at least a year ago. So if you don't remember, that's understandable. And this is a little bit detailed, so it's not a big deal. So definitely you understand that nididhyasana, and give an abbreviation here, nididhyasana is the specific practice prescribed to remove viparita bhavana. We've talked about nididhyasana at great length, so we won't go further into it. Now, pretty obviously, manana is the specific practice to remove this prameya asambhavana. That's a perfect connection. When there is manana, is a process of removing doubts. That's a simple but accurate definition. Manana is the process of removing doubts, and most of those doubts are with regard to who am I. Obviously, in the study of Vedanta, that's the subject matter, is your true nature. So these doubts are regard to who am I. But now we're going to get a subtle reinterpretation and say that shravana is a process meant for removing pramana sambhavana. What is Vedanta teaching in the Mahavakya Tattvamasi? What exactly do the words tat and tvam refer to? They're pronouns. So we have to understand the reference of those pronouns properly. So this, in a more nuanced interpretation, shravana is a practice, not simply listening, but more specifically. You know, very often, the definition I've given for shravana in a more general sense is shravana is using the teachings of Vedanta as unfolded by your teacher for the sake of self-inquiry. That's my general definition. That's the most common definition, but here we're giving a more refined analysis of these three practices, because what really gives you the pramana, so Vedanta is the pramana, your true nature is the prameya. So what is it that actually gives you pramana? It is not shravana, but rather, and just in abbreviation, the Mahavakya. The Mahavakya, in this refined analysis, the Mahavakya gives you pramana, but generally, jnanam, atmajnanam. But generally, from the Mahavakya, the knowledge you get is sapratibandhika jnanam. So here you can see what happens very clearly. From the Mahavakya, you gain sapratibandhika jnanam. Then we need to remove the pratibandhas. How do we remove the pratibandhas? Shravana removes pramana asambhavana. Manana removes prameya asambhavana. And finally, nididhyasana removes viparita bhavana. So this is the more refined way of understanding the relationship of these three main practices of Advaita Vedanta. So we go back here, and we need the verse. Good. So, and that's what Shankara is talking about here. He says, tatra, there, just to review, let me just paraphrase. So, pratibandha vihina tvat. When the pratibandhas have been removed through shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. So the prama has already arisen. Look at the in the third line, prama jayeta. This knowledge has already arisen. Svayam cha anubhavatmanaha, but your true conscious nature. But the pala, the fruit, the moksha, freedom from suffering, does not take place until pratibandha vihina tvat, until there is the removal of these three categories of obstacles. And then atmani eva. Then with atmani eva, with regard to yourself, there is no more suffering. Nasamshayaha, without doubt, there's no suffering. Without these three categories of obstacles, suffering comes to an end. In the presence of these three categories of obstacles, we could say that suffering partially comes to an end. Whenever the obstacles are not standing in your way, sometimes you can skirt around an obstacle. If you're walking down the road, somebody's standing in front of you, you can walk around. But there are other obstacles that you can't walk around. So what I'm suggesting is the obstacles are a little more complex. There are some obstacles you can deal with very easily, other obstacles you can't. But as long as there are obstacles remaining, you are still subject to suffering under certain circumstances. So in the complete absence, that's what Shankara says in this verse, in the complete absence of these obstacles, when the Mahavakya leads you to discover your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, at that moment you become free from suffering, as he said in the prior verse. Okay. The topic changes here, but we will get started on the next topic. Excuse me. Let's just recite the verse first.
Kutaste pipalam yogyam, kutaste pipalam yogam, rajaniva jayadikam, rajaniva jayadikam, Taranatmatvahetubhyam, Taranatmatvahetubhyam, Kriyaya Pratyayasya Cha, Kriyaya Pratyayasya Cha.
Palam. So Shankara continues to talk about this pala. So when somebody is enlightened, you ask, if you ask someone who's enlightened, are you enlightened? It's actually a very messy question. It's a messy question because the question who gets enlightened is messy. When we've had this discussion, who gets enlightened? Does your body get enlightened? Mind? No. Ego? Ego is a thought. Thoughts don't get enlightened. Consciousness? Consciousness was never bound. Who gets enlightened? So look at the problem. Who gets enlightened? When enlightenment takes place, that who goes away. Prior to enlightenment, in fact, you could. I've never thought about it like this. Try this. Before you get enlightened, you can say, who needs enlightenment? That we can answer. Who needs enlightenment? But after enlightenment, if you ask the same question, who needs enlightenment, the answer is no one. Because enlightenment's already, for two reasons, enlightenment has already taken place, and the second reason is that who has gone away. I'm just pointing out that it's a messy question, and we've discussed this at great length in prior classes, so we won't go further here. But isn't it kind of natural if you ask an enlightened person, are you enlightened? What the reflection of the enlightened person will be like this. Actually, I'm giving it away. I shouldn't do that, but I'm going to. In other words, I'm stealing Shankaracharya's thunder in his verse. I'm giving it away, but that's fine. If you ask an enlightened person, are you enlightened? Of course, the enlightened person understands, I am Satchidananda Atma, always been enlightened. Body doesn't get enlightened, mind doesn't get enlightened, ego doesn't get enlightened. But yet, the enlightened person says, the enlightened person recognizes the absence of suffering. Right? Based on the absence of suffering, the enlightened person is going to say, yes, I am enlightened. Doesn't that make sense? Based on the absence of suffering, the enlightened person says, yes, I am. But now it's still messy because the enlightened person uses the pronoun I. And that is really, I said there's a shift of topic here. And that Shankara's next topic here is that nasty pronoun. Nasty because it's the focal point of the problem. And you say, who suffers? What pronoun will you use? Who's confused? Same pronoun. Who is studying Vedanta? That I is really a big deal and needs to be properly understood. And that's what this verse is about. When the enlightened person says, I am enlightened, again, I'm stealing Shankara's thunder. For the enlightened person, that I does not mean body, does not mean mind, does not mean ego. When an enlightened person uses I intentionally, it means Satchidananda Atma. So then how could the enlightened person say, I am Satchidananda Atma, which became enlightened in 2008? You know, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And that's what Shankara wants to address here in this verse. Go down to the second half. Tad anatmatva Hetubhyam. And this, by the way, the Sanskrit here is a mess. It's really difficult, and I looked at several translations. One of them blew it entirely. I mean, it's that complicated. And even when you study the commentary, usually after you study the commentary, the verse becomes more clear. But here, it's just difficult. Anyway, this is, I think, a very clear understanding of this verse. He says, if you ask that enlightened person, are you enlightened? The enlightened person knows, tat, he knows that anatmatva, enlightenment, is not a quality of atma. Atma does not become enlightened. Remember the logic behind that? Anything that goes through a change can go through another change. That which goes flip can go flop. So if Atma is capable of getting enlightened, then it's capable of getting unenlightened. So, huge problem. So this is one reason he gives. So anatma-tva, because enlightenment, and this is all with reference to that word palam, in the first line, the fruits of enlightenment, moksha. And he says, anatmatva, the fruits of enlightenment cannot belong to atma. Atma doesn't get liberated, nor to hetu. Hetu, and that's a dual ending, anatma and hetu. There are two factors here. And here hetu, which would mean the cause for enlightenment, and the cause, just as enlightenment doesn't belong to atma, also enlightenment is not the hetu, is not the cause, or we could say caused by, enlightenment is not caused by kriyayaha, is not caused by actions, nor is enlightenment caused by pratyayasya, by mental activity. So enlightenment is not caused by actions, which means the act of coming to this class or any other class will never, ever make you... true, right? Enlightenment is not a physical deed of coming to a class. That's not going to... We said before, it is the discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. You can come to any number of classes without making that discovery. So it's not the act of coming to class, it's not a kriya, it's not an action, a deed, nor is it a pratyaya, a thought. How deeply do we want to go into this? So, here's a short version, because we could spend hours talking about this. The short version is this. And the reason I paused is, wait a minute. Pratyaya, thoughts, in particular, akhandakara vritti, the discovery of the true limitless nature of your true self. That vritti, in a manner of speaking, makes you enlightened. But the complexity here is really speaking that vritti, when you discover your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, that particular pratyaya, pratyaya and vritti are synonymous here, that particular recognition serves to remove ignorance, remove the so-called veil of ignorance. What does that recognition do to Atma? Nothing. It merely removes ignorance. So in this sense, and this is a very limited sense to explain Shankara's pretty difficult Sanskrit here, what Shankara is saying, enlightenment is not a transformation of Atma, in any way whatsoever, nor is enlightenment the result of any deed, any action. And the more broad sense of it, it's not the result of doing different kinds of rituals. That's a very important discussion, not so much in this text, but in many other texts. It's a huge issue. It's not the result of kriya, meaning not the result of rituals, and in our case we've taken not the result of any kind of action, including coming into class. And finally, enlightenment is not even the result of mental activities, and that's why I went into a little detail here. There is a mental activity of removing ignorance, but that is, it's hard to call that enlightenment. You know, we think, and the metaphor I've given too many times, we think of enlightenment as a great accomplishment. And then when we describe enlightenment as the mere removal of ignorance, if we put it in those terms, then enlightenment is no big deal. Is it something to be puffed up about? And the metaphor I've given, when you take out your garbage from your kitchen to the bin outside, is that something to be proud of? Getting rid of garbage metaphorically stands for getting rid of ignorance. So in that limited sense, enlightenment is not the result of this mental activity. Yes, I'm sorry, this is Shankara. He's made a very complex statement here, and I'm doing my best to explain it. That being said, the point of the verse is the first half, which is much easier to wrap your head about and head around, and that's when an enlightened person says, yeah, I am enlightened. And Shankara gives us, I've never seen this metaphor given anywhere else. So when the enlightened person says, I am enlightened, I refers to unchanging consciousness. Kutaste. Kutasta, unchanging. Kutaste api. Palam yogyam, this palam, this fruit, which we call moksha, freedom from suffering. This moksha, freedom from suffering, is yogyam. It is suitable. It is a suitable word with regard to kutaste, with regard to unchanging consciousness. You can say unchanging, paraphrase, it is okay, huh? Yogyam. In American English, it's okay. How's that? It is okay to say moksha gains freedom from suffering. Does moksha gain freedom from suffering? It didn't have suffering in the first place. But in a metaphorical sense, it is okay to say, it's definitely okay to say Atma is free from suffering. But you didn't enjoy that freedom from suffering before, which is why the enlightened person can say, I am enlightened with regard to that unchanging consciousness, but it's used by the enlightened person in a metaphorical sense, and I've never seen this anywhere before outside of this text. Shankara says it is like Rajani Eva Jayadi Kam. It's like when the king says, in the battle, I was victorious. So this jayadi kam, this victory, etc., is attributed to the king. I am victorious. Was the king on the battlefield? The king was back in his palace having his feet massaged while all of his warriors were out there suffering terribly and getting, you know. So, but yet, the king says, I am victorious. It's a metaphorical usage because the king is king. Because the king is a king, he can get away with saying that. I am victorious. And just like the king can get away with saying, I am victorious, the enlightened person can get away with saying, I am enlightened, because it's a metaphorical usage. The king didn't really go out on a battlefield, yet the king says, I won. In the same way, consciousness is unchanging. The enlightened person knows he or she is that consciousness, but just as the king can get away with saying, I won, in the same way the enlightened person can get away with, so to speak, saying, I am enlightened. Okay, there's a little bit about that pronoun I, and the next several verses, Shankara is going to develop that further. We'll see that in our next class. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukkha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. That's it. Good.